Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Middle Tennessee. Discussing the Nashville Predators, a Game 2 loss to the Hurricanes last night. They're down 0-2 in the series, coming back home for Game 3 tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Looking forward to that game. Should be a great environment inside Bridgestone Arena. And taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've talked a lot about the game today, the power play that was not good whatsoever. An interesting moment last night in the post game as well regarding yourself, Steve Lehman, our good friend from News Channel 5, and Predators head coach John Hines as well. Let's listen to the exchange, the reaction last night in the post-game press conference, and then we'll allow you to kind of set it up and explain what you were going for after that when we get done with that. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say last night in the press conference.
John, we talk a lot in these playoffs about goalies stealing games. Did you think that Saros played one of those games and that it was basically squandered tonight?
Is that you? Is that Joe?
Could you hear me? You got me?
Yeah. Did you ask if our goalie stole the game or their goalie?
Well, no. What I was saying was Saros's performance tonight sort of a classic, you know, goalie stealing a game in the playoffs, you know, that obviously you didn't win, but it was, you know, what about this, the squandering of his performance?
I thought our team played well.
John, when you're down 2-0, and obviously there were a few mistakes in game one, and then tonight the power play woes, what do you hang your hat on, or what do you take as a positive to get some, I guess, positive mojo going into game three?
Regarding what?
Just the way you're playing. How do you take a positive or have a positive mentality going into game three?
I think the last two questions, like, did we watch the same game? You know, I think when you look at the hockey game, we played a pretty good game. I thought their goaltender made some really good saves. We had good looks. I think you look at shot attempts, you look at shots, you look at offensive zone time, you look at how the game was played. We've got to do a better job on the power play. But I think the last two questions, you know, I think there's a lot of good things to come in the game. We're in a series. We're a better team than we were in the first night. We obviously know the power play has got to be better. But I think there's a lot of positive going out of this game and then coming home.
So that was the exchange last night between John Hines, Joe Rexrode, and our good friend Steve Lehman as well. And Joe, just kind of watching that unfold in real time last night, what happened and what stood out to me was it just kind of felt like there was a misunderstanding of what you were going for there with your question for John Hines. Now, I thought Lehman's question was pretty easy to understand. I don't really know what happened there. But what kind of happened from your vantage point and this exchange last night with yourself and John Hines?
See, there's a different kind of pressure here in the Zoom world where, you know, last night I'm covering the game, you know, from my family room, watching on television. And so then I get on the post game and my wife is sitting there in the room with me. And as that question's coming out, and listen, Katie has given me Katie is a former reporter. She's a former police reporter.
Yes.
She has ranted many times about the questions of sports reporters. Okay. Cause she's been subjected to many of them.
Deservedly.
And she's
so.
Like, why do you guys sit there and like try to give the whole answer? Just ask a question. And what does this talk about crap? So Katie already is like, you know, she's, and so I've got the pressure of her in the room. Now, usually she's not the presser with me. So I felt myself fumbling my question there. And I was like, God, I know I have a smart question here. But so then she's like, that's the dumbest question you've ever asked. But, you know, because Katie does not ease up on me. So then I'll give you more. First of all, on this story. So apparently now, like, Stillman and I are going to be allies on this because, like, Jared is, I can tell, like, on his show, he's texting me about the post-game show, which so that happens, and I have the post-game show on Bally Sports, and so then, like, the question is replayed right after it happens, and I'm listening to him like, yeah, it sounded kind of dumb. But then Vingan calls me because we're talking about what we're going to write, and then they switch to Lindsay Lindsey Rowley and Terry Crisp, and they just start trashing me. Terry Crisp is like, well, I had to hit these stupid, ridiculous questions. As a coach, it was never easy, or whatever he said. I'm like, what? Stupid, ridiculous questions? What are we talking about here? I mean, Lindsey didn't really rip me. She was just like, I agree. You know, I agree with Coach Hines. Okay, here's my question. Is it controversial to think that to say that like Soros played great and deserved better when his team didn't score? I mean, I don't think so.
That's
pretty routine.
Look, right? I'll be honest with you. Like, but, I saw that answer from Hines last night.
On my part.
And maybe you could have phrased it better. I don't know, but like I knew what you were asking last night. I thought it was pretty clear what direction you were going where. I do think Hines probably misunderstood the question. And then, of course, you know, I mean, that leads to, you know, all kinds of stuff on social media last night. People yelling about Hines, some people yelling about you. I mean, it was just kind of this crazy back and forth last night on social media. But between that and then you have Layman's question as well, which I thought was pretty direct, right? Like what sort of positives are you taking into game three after being down 0-2 in the series? I think a pretty direct question there. I mean, I just found that entire exchange a little weird last night after the game.
Well, I mean, are we watching the same game?
Yeah.
And here's another funny part of this. As I said earlier on the show, the three of us were texting. I think I was the highest on their overall performance of the three of us.
Like, by far.
I said that. I was like, they played a lot. I thought they played a lot better. 5-on-5, they play a lot better. Now, unfortunately for the Preds, the power play time does count in your overall performance, and it was abysmal. But if you separate it out, I agree they play better 5-on-5. And you know, this are we watching the same game again? Layman wasn't sitting there saying, "Are you going to rebound from being the worst hockey team in the history of hockey?" He was just like, "What can you take positive forward?"
Yeah,
I mean they got outscored 8-2 in two games. They scored no goals last night. Their power play was comically bad. They also played better 5-on-5. There was some encouragement, but to me the most encouraging thing out of everything is Soros and how he's playing right now. And I stand by that Soros played a steal a game in a playoffs and did not get help.
Well, and he didn't get any goal support whatsoever. I mean, I had a bit of an issue with what happened last night in the post game, not just from Hines, but from Johansson and Yossi as well. Look, I get it. You're down two games in the series. You're trying to stay as even as you can heading into game three. You're coming back home, and you're hoping you could take advantage of home ice. I realize all that. But maybe I'm just influenced as well by what we saw after the play-in series last year against Arizona. But this, hey, we played good. We played well. We just didn't execute. Just didn't score on the power play. Got to be better on the power play. Like, that crap gets old after a while, and we've reached the point where that's old with this team. Like, nobody wants to hear after a playoff series against Arizona about how well you played. You just couldn't find a way to score enough goals, and you ran into a hot goaltender. Nobody wants to hear that at this time. I realize this series is not over, and they've still got a chance to come back in here, so it's not exactly the same situation. But I did kind of have some Arizona vibes last night in that post-game press conference of, yeah, there's a whole lot of trying to put some lipstick on this pig that we're seeing right now. And quite frankly, I think Predators fans are tired of that.
Yeah, they don't want to hear it. I mean, I'm trying to think of who – and I think there's not a lot of guys on this roster who will come out and say, you know, like sharp things after a loss. Maybe Ekholm would be your best bet, you know. I mean, some of that is, look, you've got to try to find – whatever positives you can find, and you're not giving up. And so that's going to be your mindset. And so you'll bring that into the presser. And it was not as bad. Like, it was bad last year because like, there's not even like a participation white ribbon for playing better than Arizona in a series you should have won that you lost in four. This is different. This is a better team. No one thinks you're going to beat them, but still, I agree. There's a balance there between in your own mind. You got to take the positives. You got to move forward. You got to try to win a game, but publicly, you know, it's okay to say you didn't play your best. It's okay to rip yourself a little bit.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Michael from Hendersonville texting in. The wording of your question was awful. It didn't help. You had to repeat yourself. We knew where your heart was though, and you'll get an A for an effort. You'll get them next time, champ. So a little bit of encouragement there at the end for Rex Road from Michael in Hendersonville.
Thank you so much, Michael. Yeah, I tell you, I need the pressure of Katie in the room during a presser. It's
intense.
Not something I'm used to. Yeah, I think I need to lock myself away somewhere next game.
Well, we've talked about players all show long today, rising up to the moment in the playoffs. Maybe you need like a pregame speech as well. Maybe, you know, Katie, you got to be able to hang in there and handle this adversity, Rex Road.
Listen, coming home, you know, the fans are going to be energetic. The Zoom is going to be it's going to be crackle free. The Wi-Fi is going to be strong. Man, my next question is going to be perfect. Right and concise and to the point.
We're looking forward to that coming up after game three on Friday. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Nashville Predators. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Also, a really cool thing happening between the Nashville Predators and our radio station here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll get to more of that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We'll be joined at 9:30 by Preds radio analyst Hal Gill. We'll break down game two in a little bit more detail with him coming up here in about 12 minutes or so. So make sure you stay tuned in for that. Ryan Porth, a really cool announcement that's just come out between the Nashville Predators and our radio station here on ESPN 102.5 The Game regarding 615 Day that will benefit the Boys and Girls Clubs of Middle Tennessee. What can you tell us about what's going to be going down on 615 Day here between the Predators and ESPN 102.5 The Game as well?
Yeah, so as you may know, June 15th is 615 on the calendar, and the area code for Nashville is 615.
Both these things are true.
In case I needed to explain this. So Tuesday, June 15th is 615 day this year, and we are teaming up with the Nashville Predators on a 615 day celebration with an all-day broadcast at Fordyce Center in Bellevue, where you guys will be out there, Darren Donick and Chase, Stillman and Company, everybody out at Fordyce Center in Bellevue for a really good cause where there will be some free food. It's a free event where a lot of the Boys and Girls Club kids are going to be out there either learning how to play hockey or, you know, really benefiting from this day. All the proceeds from this day will go to the Boys and Girls Club of Middle Tennessee. You know, there will be some free public skates that day. There will be some opportunities for the listeners leading up to this event to win an opportunity to shoot the puck from center ice and try to make it into the little hole when they put up the board between the pipes. So it's going to be a really fun day, all for a good cause. We wanted to come up with something that could be community-related, giving back to Nashville, and 615 day is going to be that opportunity. So there will be more info that comes out throughout this next month leading up to June 15th. There will be a silent auction that will begin at some point before June 15th, where, again, all the proceeds from that silent auction with some cool prizes will all go to the Boys and Girls Club. So really excited about this event.
And as you said, coming up on June the 15th as well, 615 day here in Nashville, Tennessee. By the way, just tweeted out a statement and some information as well at 1025 The Game on Twitter. For more information on 615 day, you can check it out as well at thegamenashville.com. And we'll have a lot more to discuss on 615 day coming up in the weeks ahead here. Joe, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Going back to your question on John Hines, Matt in Gallatin wants to know, how do you think Mike Vrabel would have handled that question last night? That would have been fun.
Well, you know what's funny is, like, in the moment, I was like, gosh, I flubbed that. And also, the two answers, you know, I was like, dang, he is, you know, Hines is ticked, you know. But then when you listen back to him, like, well, it wasn't, I mean for Hines, who's very even keel, yeah, it was notable because he never has any of that. Yeah, Vrabel might have strangled me, but that's the cool thing about Zoom. See, that's where I prefer, you know, being in the room with Katie.
Definitely could have been a Brett Kern reference last night if Rabel's involved.
Yeah, the double reverse to the punter.
Reverse to the punter. That's right. For sure.
What would have the equivalent been?
.com.
Like squandering a great performance by Ryan Tannehill in a playoff game or something like that?
I guess so.
Yeah.
We got to play better, got to coach better. That's what his response would have been.
Yeah. Maybe ask about the coordinator.
Yeah. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a text that says, the smaller players like Granlund, Tolvanen, Arvidsson, Grimaldi, and Ellis have room on the ice during the regular season to produce, but once that room is eliminated in the playoffs, they are a no-show. We've talked about that a little bit on the show today, and it's interesting because it's not like we've not seen some of these guys produce. Ellis has been good in the playoffs before. Arvidsson's been okay in the playoffs before. Now, with Arvidsson, it's a little bit different. Like, I don't ever remember Arvidsson just being amazing in the playoffs like we've seen him at times in the regular season. But Rocco, I mean, Grimaldi was really good in the 2019 series against Dallas as well. But you do wonder, like, moving forward here, if guys like Brad Richardson and Nick Cousins, who I think started to play pretty well down the stretch for the Predators as well, like, do they find a way into the lineup when Game 3 rolls around? And honestly, Joe, like, one of the takeaways I had from last night, and I don't know if it's just because he's been hurt and he's coming back from injury, or if this is what he is now heading into the playoffs. I thought a pretty unimpressive performance last night from Victor Arvidsson. And look, we've seen him play at a really high level before, but it kind of feels like he's diminishing a bit as a player right before our eyes. And last night, when you have the combination of getting pushed around like multiple people have pointed out today on the text line, and he does not have the speed burst at the moment to go along with it, he's not bringing a whole lot to the table out there, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. If he's not, if his speed game isn't doing anything, then he's not helping you too much. And to the texter's point, I mean, time and space is taken away in the playoffs. Physicality becomes more important in the playoffs. You know, for this lineup, for Game 3, this is the game. I think you could make a case for John Hines' Game 1 lineup in this game. At home, get every big hitter you can get out there. You can control matchups. Get your guy, get Branson going, you know. But seriously, I mean, this is a game where I think you could make the – and I hear some people saying, what about Rocco? And it's worth a thought. I agree with you on Cousins. But, like, Olivier and Janot in the lineup, like, this might be the game to do something like that and say, you know what? I'd also be looking at about John and say, how do they have 20 more hits than us in the first two games?
Yeah.
That was supposed to be our game.
Now, I wonder if a little bit of that is some hometown counting of the hits. Maybe. That happens from time to time.
Yeah, could be.
But to your point, even if it is, like, that was supposed to be something that you felt like if you're the Predators, that's an advantage for you heading into this series. There's no question that's not been an advantage. Like, Carolina, to me, has been every bit as physical as the Predators have, and in some cases more physical in this series so far.
Yeah, so this next game lineup is going to be actually just fascinating because I think you can still make the case for Tolvanen on the power play that you hope could actually get shots and have a chance to do anything, but you can also look at him 5-on-5 and say, man, there's a few different guys you could put in there who do more for you. Do you want more speed? Do you want more physicality? Does a guy like Cousins deserve a look? Does a guy like Grimaldi deserve a look? Does Fabro see the ice at all in this series?
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see what Hines comes up with for Game 3.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Knox from Florida texting in saying, what stood out to me more than the power player lineup, the third goal allowed. Our big-name guys not producing is one thing, but to hang Soros out to dry after his performance is inexcusable, not only from amateurs, but from professionals as well. And to top that, for Hines to say that he saw positives is denial. At some point, coaching must hold them accountable as well. This is coming from Knox in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of reminds me of the whole, oh, so Hines can motivate him in the regular season, he can't in the postseason. You know, this is a time for execution. It's a time for plan from him, but it's largely about execution from the players. That they are playing their guts out. There's no doubt about that. And I don't think it like Hines comes in and you know, yells at someone, or what's that going to do? What he has, the hammer, is the playing time.
Sure.
The hammer is the lineup. So Tolvanen, as they go through the film of last night and some of the things that he didn't do out there that he needs to do better, you know, that might be cause for him to not play in game three, and that should motivate him the next time he gets a chance to do more of those things that has become expected, especially of the forwards on this team. I don't disagree with Hines that there was some positives. I think he generally is a, you know, look at the bright side kind of guy in dealing with us on things. So I don't think he's totally wrong. It's just you have to isolate the power play and remove it from the conversation to really say you were happy with the performance. And you can't. I mean, it was part of the performance, and it was a joke.
Our good friend Justin Beasley from Channel 4 on Periscope says, are Hines and Rex Road good? Are they all right? I like both guys. What do you think, Joe? You good with John Hines moving forward?
Thank you, Justin. Listen. Never mind. I won't even do it. I was gonna rip Justin. I'm not gonna do it. I love you, Justin.
We appreciate
it. Let's all be friends
here on the show. When we come back, speaking of friends, we'll be joined by our friend, Preds radio analyst Hal Gill, coming up next. We'll look back at game two and ahead to game three with him next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Predators fall last night in Game 2, 3-0 to the Hurricanes. They're down 0-2 heading back here for Game 3 at Bridgestone Arena coming up tomorrow night. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Preds radio analyst, Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Skillsy, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. Just putting the pieces together after last night, but it's a new day.
It is a new day, and we've talked a lot here today on the show, Hal, about the power play last night. Obviously, when you go 0-7, that's going to be a pretty big storyline coming out of the game. We knew Carolina was very good on the penalty kill before we came into this series. So when you watch the Predators' power play right now, what are you seeing out there? What is Carolina making difficult for them? And what are the Predators just simply not executing on, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. First of all, you have to remember that it's one of the best penalty kills in the league. And they are committed to it. They're fast. They're big. They have long sticks. They take away all your options. But systems-wise, if we're getting down the nitty-gritty, they just couldn't get zone time. They couldn't set up enough. And the problem I think they're having is the Preds like to enter and rim it around the boards and have the weak side D pick it up, and that's how they usually set up. And the Canes would leave a guy over there, and just so it was diffused before they could even get a setup. Downfall of doing that as a penalty kill is that you leave a guy on the weak side, and so it's covered in the middle. And so I think towards the end of the game, they tried to through the middle a little bit more, knowing that that guy was on the weak side, and it worked a couple times to get set up, but that was a challenge for them. And then when they are set up, you know, it's interesting because a lot of hockey people and fans in general will just say, you know, if you have a struggling power play, you got to shoot. Well, it doesn't work that way. It's not as simple as just shoot. I feel like the Preds were trying to shoot. What they weren't doing was moving the puck quick enough so that they were getting shots with legitimate scoring chances and with the ability to track down pucks and create odd man chances in front. And to do that, I think they just need to pass it a couple times more, you know, and it could be as simple as, you know, instead of half wall to the point, it could be half wall to the point, to the half wall, back to the point, to the other, to the half wall again, and a shot. It just a couple more passes, and I think they'll create a lot more lanes and get a lot more movement out of the penalty kill. And ultimately, that's what Carolina did to the Preds. They got that exchange up top with the top two forwards and got them out of position and were able to attack from the flank and hit the seam pass. So, you know, I think it's not too far off. It's right there. You know, you had a couple shots, a couple big blocks. Tolvanen had a great look. He gets that shot blocked, but that's the look that they're looking for. But good penalty kills have a way of having sticks in the passing lanes, and they have bodies in shot lanes, and that's what Carolina did. So they got to stick with it, though. You know, you look at that game, and you get one power play goal, you're right in it. You get two, and you're winning a game. And so it's not too far off.
So, Hal, assuming they can make the adjustment in game three when they're on the power play and do a better job of entering the zone, how important do you think it is that Elli Tolvanen is part of that first unit on the power play? And what did you think of his overall performance last night?
Yeah, I think, you know, the frustrating part is he didn't get the puck enough. You know, I think every time he got it, I'm seeing things that things open up for him. You know, and he had that pass through the seam to Duchesne, which is exactly what you're looking for. Duchesne double clutches it, and it gives time for Nedeljkovic to get over and make a save on the shot from Duchesne. But those are the looks that you're looking for. You know, he has a way of extending zone time, and he's probably the best. I think he is the best on the team at doing it. Maybe Roman Josi is right up there with that, but he can be a scoring threat and hit two pass lanes at the same time. And for a penalty killer, that's what scares you more than anything. And so I thought he had a couple good looks. I'd love to see the power play go through him more, just because you know, he is so deadly with the options that he has available to him, whether it's a seam pass or just a shot in general. So I thought that what he did was good, but I think they need to get through him a little bit more. The sad part is, you know, the 5-on-5, it's like, can you really give a fair assessment to anyone 5-on-5? There wasn't much time out there 5-on-5, so it really comes down to the power play. If the games are going to be that chippy and there's going to be that many penalties, then, yeah, I think you definitely need him in the lineup, because he can run a power play for you.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And how we spend so much time, you know, in between game one and game two talking about the lineup decisions and whether or not people agree with that, and that's all well and good. But one thing John Hines talked about was you can make the lineup changes you want to make, but you need your best players to step up and play well. And you look at the other side, Jordan Staal's played well. Obviously, Sebastian Aho, Svechnikov with that connection last night as well. And then you look around at the Predators, and outside of Josi, who I thought was really good last night, and Forsberg to a certain degree, we've not seen much from Duchesne and Johansson and Arvidsson so far in this series. How much of this is just going to have to be, if the Predators have any chance in this series, some of those guys, those three guys specifically that I just mentioned, are going to have to be better, or they're just not going to have enough firepower?
Yeah, it's tough. As far as elite goal scorers go, it's such a weird thing, because you say, okay, they got to produce. Well, in a playoff game, all you need is once. You know, you're talking about Aho, and you're like, oh, he's got to – if he doesn't score that goal, are they looking over at him going, oh, he's got to be better? You know, it's like such a fine line. Phil goes down and hits iron and tries to go short side. And if he scores that goal, you know, he's the hero. And so Arvidsson had that one wraparound try that was a good attempt. Duchesne had the shot off the half wall that I talked about, where he just double clutches it and gives the goalie time to come across. If he can make that clean play, we're talking about them as heroes. And so it's really a fine line. And as a player, you don't want to get discouraged. You want to keep going out and doing the little things, because eventually it'll come around for you if you keep doing things right. But as a coach, they're looking at it going, who's that guy that's going to make it happen? You know, it's one thing to talk about, oh, I had some good looks, but you need big-time players to step up. And unfortunately, that means, you know, not hoping for good breaks to happen, but making them happen. And that's where the hard part for John Hines is, do I want to put a heavy lineup that's just going to grind them down and keep working? Do I want to put in a fast skill lineup? Is that going to be the focus? Because we need to keep attacking and keep trying to generate scoring chances. That's the hard part for a coach. So I don't know how you manage that. And then, you know, ultimately you've got to look at chemistry and say who's working well with who and who can we put out. They're going to have the last change so at home. So that's going to be another wrinkle that John Hines is going to have to weigh and say, okay, we can get the matchups that we want. Who should we have together and how should we, you know, how should we play our cards?
Hal, we've watched Mikal Granlund be certainly one of the best players on this team this year. Huge part of why this team is in this series. And haven't seen much from him at all in two games, which has kind of been the theme for him in three postseasons with the Preds. Is it as simple as the physicality of the playoffs, the space getting taken away just doesn't suit his game? What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good last night. I thought what he does really well is not just the, you know, in around the net and in the corners, but also on the half wall where he can protect the puck and then he's attacking. He can turn it from protecting the puck to attack, and that's what the Preds have had a hard time doing. You know, you look at that Richardson play that he draws a penalty where he's on the half wall and he takes a quick pivot move and goes to the net. Well, he draws a penalty there. So in my mind, that's he's done his job. And that's what Granlund has consistently done well, I think. So he's also playing against tough lines. He has a tough role. And again, you know, not to beat it to death, but 5-on-5, I think he's a guy that wants to get into a rhythm and then his line needs to get into a rhythm. Poor Luke Cunningham didn't see any ice for two games. He's sitting there watching power play penalty kill,
yeah.
And so he's not getting out on the ice. So there's really – it's tough for those guys to get into a rhythm. So I think he's performing. He's just performing in subtleties as opposed to being a big splash on the score sheet.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row. Joins us every Thursday at 9:30 here on the show. Hal, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. We'll come back, react a little bit to what Hal had to say here, and finish up the show with a lot of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll do that next here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025, The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. This week it's buy one, get one free tickets to Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon. Beach Bend Park is your ticket to summer fun. Double your fun and double your savings with buy one, get one admission. Two parks, two tickets for the price of one. Get yours now at thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Nashville Predators. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Kathy on the text line says, I'm completely with Katie Rexroad on some questions from sports reporters. I cringe when I hear talk about blank, and some do have a tendency to ask long, rambling, answer-your-own-question questions. Joe, are you a big violator of the long question, answer-your-own-question questions, as Kathy points out?
Well, Kathy, it's totally fair. I mean, I think Katie could be a little nicer sometimes about it, but it is totally fair. I try really hard to ask brief, concise, open-ended questions, but sometimes I fail, and I believe that last night counts as a failure.
It's okay. We expect better.
And by the way, so Darren Donick Chase coming up. I'm interested to hear from Willie. Is the entire Bally Sports broadcast opinion that I ask stupid, ridiculous questions, or is that just crispy? I would like to know.
I don't know. We'll have to find out. Coming up at 10 o'clock today here on the show. Maybe Willie will let you know. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Amy texting in. Where do you even start about last night? Do you both agree that Forsberg has just not looked as sharp and like himself since returning to the lineup? What have you thought of Philip Forsberg so far in this series?
He's way down my list of concerns. I mean, he hit the post last night. He had five shots on goal last night. He's got, he had the great goal in game one. I mean, of course you always want more from him. If he doesn't score in a game where you don't score in a game, you look at him first, right?
Yeah.
But he's way down my list of concerns. And look, I mean, I think Hal has great analysis and made some good points about Granlund making some crafty plays last night. But like, there's a guy who I still think, like, I think you need more from him.
I agree.
I do. And he may not be, you know, I just think that the impact he's had on games leading into this postseason was eye popping at times. Right?
Yeah.
And Carolina's going to make it harder for him and everybody, but there's an example of someone I'd put way higher on my list of concerns right now than Forsberg.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Donovan from Wisconsin texting in. Duchesne needs to be set for at least a game. For a guy who makes $8 million a year and makes as many bad choices as he did yesterday with some passes. I mean, I didn't think Duchesne was awful yesterday. I mean, he did have a couple of passes trying to go across the box on the power play. They got picked off and they started to go the other way. Now, I don't really want to get into the business of singling out people on that power play yesterday, because that was a pretty collective affair that we saw on the power play of Struggle Bus yesterday. But Duchesne, to Hal's point, he did have that one opportunity where he kind of double clutched it a little bit, and Nedeljkovic had time to slide over and make that save. He just doesn't look crisp. And this is not a this series thing. Like, I've seen Duchesne play a lot of hockey. He used to be in the Predators division. He played with Colorado. He was good in Ottawa for the most part, good with Columbus as well. I've seen him when he's at his best. There's not a whole lot of thinking involved. He's just making plays, reading, and reacting. Right now, it just doesn't look like anything they're doing out there is really all that smooth. There doesn't seem to be a ton of chemistry out there, and I think Carolina has a lot to do with that. They're making life very difficult on the Predators, but yeah, Duchesne was not great yesterday. I didn't come away from that game yesterday thinking that Duchesne was this big problem in the lineup.
No, I agree, and he got more ice time, and I actually thought you could argue that a couple of his passes could have been good passes. You know, to your point, there was some chemistry lacking at times. I think some of it, you know, you could say some of it is mixing and matching and stuff like that. Some of it is, to Hal's point last segment, I mean, you didn't have much 5-on-5 time, you know, in this game. It was hard to set up a rhythm. But also, it's also Carolina, I think, has sped up the Preds a lot. I think you see that a lot so far in these two games, where maybe there's a little bit more time and space to make a play, but you're so used to them being in your grill that you speed up a little bit too much. So I honestly thought Duchesne looked like a guy, you know, who was trying to create some stuff, and I'm not coming away from that game thinking he needs to sit.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bobby texting in, it's really painful to see our boys so overmatched all the way around. Unfortunately, every time we've made the playoffs the last few years, I feel like I've been watching and rooting for the Bad News Bears. It's a tough one from Bobby. The Bad News Bears.
Dang. Well, the Preds were not overmatched last year. They were, I think, the better team, and they lost to Arizona.
As we found out very clearly after the series was over, the press conferences, yes.
That's right. I think 2 years ago, certainly, that was I picked them. I thought they'd beat Dallas. I think most people did. And that was the physical battering series where it was clear they needed to work on that aspect of their game. But, you know, it hasn't been a lot of postseason failures, but it's definitely not trending well.
Heidi from Dixon on the text line says, is Joe mad Yarncroke didn't play? Heard he wasn't in the lineup, didn't get to watch. Were you upset that Yarncroke wasn't in there? Your good friend Joe Davion Rexcroke, not in the lineup yesterday.
And by the way, it was not for a performance. No. That was the health thing John Hines referenced, so a non-COVID illness. But, well, yeah, you know, it's always good to see Yarncroke out there. I was more upset that I picked Forsberg. I actually got the Forsberg pick, and no one scored.
That's right. He hit the post, though. Came close at one time. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland text in. What would you do to kickstart the power play? You can't get in the zone, and when they do, it's a turnover turning into a shorthanded fast break the other way. I mean, I think a lot of it starts with just finding a way to get set up. Like, that's what Hal Gill was talking about in the last segment. You've got to find a way to get set up, if you can do that, there are ways to combat an overly aggressive penalty kill unit. It requires very quick puck movement. It requires you making the right decisions, and there's a lot of pressure involved there. And at times, if you make the wrong decision, they can make you look bad going the other way. But the first step, Joe, is just getting set up.
And look, this can't be as much like trying to solve the Rubik's Cube as it looks like right now.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just – I'm like you, Robbie. Not good at math. Went into this field. Five people on one side, four on the other. I can't believe that the Preds can't make some adjustments here to do better. I mean, certainly do better than, hey, here's an odd man rush for you.
Right.
Here's another. I mean, that was crazy for a while.
Well, we'll have all sorts of reaction tomorrow, getting your thoughts as well on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com. Looking ahead to Game 3 in this series coming up between the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll do that tomorrow here on the show. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.